And happy Saturday, everyone. Happy Saturday, White Sox fans, non-White Sox fans who just happen to be listening to this podcast. We welcome you too. So this is the Northside Sox podcast. It is a Southside Sox podcast. We have many awesome shows. Thank you for listening to ours. I'm Janice Scurria. With me, as always, is the wonderful Sam Sherman. Sam, how the heck are you?
I'm pretty good. It's getting hot here in Chicago, and a lot of people, that's very exciting for the allergy battlers out there. It also comes with just horrifying allergies and doing things like taking Benadryl at, like, you know, right when you wake up in the morning to be like, I'd rather just pass out than have to deal with the impending
Benadryl,
doom.
Yeah, Benadryl is always like, can't be sneezing if you're completely unconscious.
Exactly. There's some days, though, that's what happens. I'll just be like, I'll wake up and I know it's going to be a bad day, and I'm like, not doing it. And I'm just like, fuck that. I'm going to take Benadryl, and I'd rather battle through like drowsiness than, you know, have just dripping, you know, like a stream of snot flowing from my face.
Stream of consciousness, stream of snot. Like that is the Sam Sherman promise.
So but I'm doing okay.
All right, you're doing all right. So anyway, typically we would talk about last night's White Sox game, but we're not going to do that for multiple reasons because we don't want to revisit Andrew Vaughn grounding out into a triple play. So instead, we've got something much more entertaining for you on the docket. Joining us today is an awesome guest, a really close friend of mine, a really great baseball mind, fantastic analyst. He's a writer at pitcherlist.com. He is also a contributor to Lookout Landing, our Mariners sister site on SB Nation. We have Michael Ahedo on the show. Mikey, how the heck are you?
What's up, fam? I'm all right. I'm coming off of my first in-person game night since 2019. Like literally just waking up from it. So yeah, it was weird. It was like extremely normal, which feels very odd nowadays. It feels very abnormal. But it's hard to like not be in a great mood, you know, coming off of that. So, and I'm with you guys. So aww. It's going to be great.
Awesome. Yeah. Your day is just starting on a very high note too. So Mikey, the reason why we brought you on, so not only are you absolutely fantastic to talk to, and I genuinely enjoy speaking to you, is that you wrote a couple of really fantastic White Sox articles for Pitcher List. So one being Lucas Giolito. Lucas Giolito has not gone off to the greatest start. So we call him our ace. In my mind, he is still our ace. But he certainly hasn't pitched like one. So there's been plenty of talk in circles on what the heck is going on. There was a start against the Red Sox where it seems as if the Red Sox lineup was just continuously hunting for his changeup. He was just very easy to figure out. And everyone was like, is he tipping? Like, are they intercepting signs? What the heck is going on here? But your article seems to mention that there is a slight mechanical change that Giolito can possibly make to kind of return to where he was in 2020 and 2019. Yeah, can you elaborate about that?
Yeah, it was kind of a nightmare going through and kind of doing the video work because the angles have changed slightly every year. Thankfully, I think they kind of did in the same direction, but it was like, well, I can't really view, you know, his arm slot and space when all of these angles are different. And I looked at a lot of video. but basically, what I found is that he dropped his release point down a little bit. And maybe that does speak to hitters picking the ball up more. I kind of think that it's not like maybe there is some level of tipping that's going on, but I think a lot of it has to do with the change in movement on his pitches. I think one, when your pitches are moving differently than you're used to, they're more likely to end up in locations that you don't want them to be in. So pretty much all of his pitches, and by pretty much I mean all of his pitches, have drifted arm side to an extent. His fastball is probably the least. His changeup is it's dropped down and out, so it's getting more run and sink. And then his slider is also very different. that was one of the main things that I noted in the piece is that he's locating it really poorly, and it's moving a lot differently than it ever has. It's essentially a lot of pitches with gyro spin, which means it's spinning like a washer machine or like a bullet. Because their spin direction isn't, it's hard to kind of describe, but because it's kind of at the will of gravity. So it might spin like a true gyro ball. It spins at every single direction. Like if you look at this, a spin direction chart as a clock, it'll spin from 12 to 6 and then back to 12. It'll spin all the way around. So I'm trying to see, did he add gyro? I don't remember. He still has a lot of gyro on his pitch, but I think the nature of his arm slot dropping down is it's just moving differently. And so I think he doesn't know where it's going because the movement on it is he's getting way more arm side movement on his slider. So he's getting pretty typical movement sometimes, but he's also losing it and getting arm side movement a lot. And I think that's why it's kind of ending out like elevated and over the plate. but I think a really big thing to look at aside from that, and I was kind of hesitant to believe that this was the case, but his velo dropped. And it dropped. So Eno Saris has said a lot that like the threshold for whiffs with a fastball is 94 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a year that his his fastball velo has dropped from, let me look, 94 to 93.5. So it's right at the threshold already. And if you look at his last game, he got his velo back. He got his velo back to 94.3, which is the time he's been at 94 since his first game this season. So there were a couple other things in that game that I found interesting, but I don't want to have a monologue for an hour.
No, this is absolutely fantastic insight. Yeah. And we picked up to that there was a drop in velo and that, movement was also pretty strange on a lot of his pitches too. So his slider, so he typically doesn't use his slider a lot in games. He usually will pepper it in, but he's typically just like a fastball changeup mix guy. Mm-hmm. I did hear that he is working on his slider in bullpen sessions between starts. So I'm not exactly sure what the intricacies of that work is, but he did use it quite a bit in his last start, which I think you might have mentioned either in Twitter or maybe on Mandela affecting this and just making that up.
Yeah, I said something about it. There were a couple takeaways from the game that I found pretty interesting. One is I just want to see, like, did he raise his arm slot? And it didn't seem to be the case. I think more so he had his best fastball velo, obviously, just said that, but he also had his best fastball ride or like rise, which, you know, the two are interconnected. And then he really, really elevated his changeup more than ever. So there were a lot of really encouraging things from the game. And I'm trying to pull up now, you know, if he got his slider kind of movement back, because obviously, especially if you don't have your best fastball, it's not good to lose your slider too. So I don't know. It's interesting. People are acting like it's the end of the world, and it's like, yeah, this is Lucas Giolito. Like, his numbers are not super far off from where they've been.
I definitely have been guilty of it this season of texting Janice, and even we were at a game a couple of weeks ago, and Janice, I think you'll remember, I said to you something along the lines of, is Lucas Giolito, is it possible that he is our least trusted starting pitcher right now in the rotation, which is going into the season would seem like a wild thing to think could be possible at any point. So I guess as far, you know, in your opinion, for a fan like me, who's an idiot, and looking at Lucas Giolito, and seeing kind of the early struggles, and hearing some of these changes or some of the things that he's getting on some of his pitches now, for somebody like me who, you know, can say like, oh, you know, why wasn't he, you know, what was going on? Why didn't that just happen? And it's from the start of the season, a guy like Giolito, who's already an established, you know, ace of staff. Do you think that that's just the ramp up of, you know, after last year's shortened season to now the full season? What do you kind of attribute some of that to?
Yeah, I think some guys like just come out and they're not, you know, they just don't have the best stuff. They haven't, I don't know. I don't think a lot of guys, you know, are really into, I mean, more people are into the like Rap Soto kind of things, but I think it's difficult to kind of maintain everything that you're doing because your routine's changing over the off season. Mm-hmm. So I think this is just a case of essentially bad timing because it is weird that, like, I mean, if he did lose his velo, I think he would obviously be a worse pitcher. But I think it's just like, and I guess I will admit that a little bit of this is somewhat unprecedented. Like in the article, I threw up a graph, which is his K percentage and hard hit percentage. He's getting hit pretty much as hard as he's ever been hit. Mm-hmm. His K percentage is down as much as it's been since 2019. But I think once those indicators come back, that there's really no reason to be worried. And one thing from that game is, yeah, his slider movement was back. It's, I don't know if it was in the game before that, but it's not drifting arm side. Yeah, so actually in the game against the Royals, he had two drift arm side. So it looks like his slider's back. That's good.
Yay.
The velo's back. I did text Jan. I don't know if I'm supposed to say things like this, but I texted Janice's, but he knows that, you know, the issue with his arm slot is an issue and he's working on it. So obviously he knows about all these things. I think he's a pretty sharp guy. Mm-hmm. So
I think he went on the Bat Flips and Nerds podcast and mentioned that, Mikey, so it's not private information. So
you're, oh, did he?
In cool. That regard. Yeah. He said that. I think that's also where I got the information about where he's working on his slider in bullpen sessions too. It came from Giolito himself. I was sorry to interrupt you there. Were you?
No, you're good.
Okay.
Y'all should have him on. Just hit him up.
Probably. We do have a media contact for the White Sox, but they're historically very protective of their players and who gets to interview them. Well, Sam also got to talk to Eloy Jimenez last year and asked him about Taco Bell, of all things.
that was pretty cool. Yeah, what were your thoughts? Well, I think it was when I was talking to Luis Robert and talking about how he was like, there was on Instagram, it was like he was eating a ton of Pizza Hut. And yeah. I was just like, wow, like, or I don't know if it was Pizza Hut or Domino's, but it was Domino's.
Yeah. Apparently that's all there is in Charlotte, North Carolina, is just Domino's mm-hmm. eat.
So, yeah. And he said too that it, you know, this was, you know, something just my ignorance, but like, he said that, you know, without speaking English, when he's in Charlotte, North Carolina, it's like, you know, he can go to a Pizza Hut and be like, it's easy. You know, he can order the same thing. It's good enough. He enjoys it. Anyway, that got my answer of why every night it seemed like he was just had boxes of Pizza Hut in his room.
Oh, an athlete's diet.
Yeah, I think all of Chicago was more so offended that he would go to Domino's or Pizza Hut, and everyone was like, oh, we got to show him some real pizza, cut into squares, tavern style pizza.
Yeah.
I wonder what the Seattle equivalent of that is. I guess it's probably like either drinking Folgers. We're going to, I don't even know, what's like a really bad coffee place? Like a chain?
I mean, I would say like Starbucks is probably the equivalent of like Pizza Hut, right? It's just kind of everywhere. They're trying to be artisanal. Yeah. They're really trying to kind of tap into that, you know, like super.
Okay.
Like,
I'm into that. That's a good comp.
Yeah.
I do feel like Starbucks is a little better. Like I don't feel bad when I get stuff there. Maybe when I am eating, I'm like, this was just warmed up. But like Domino's and Pizza Hut, I'm like, I'm kind of a dirt bag right now.
Hey, the crispy crust. I don't know if they still have it. The crispy crust at Pizza Hut is actually really good.
Sam
is coming out. He is
Janice
supporting.
We're trying to get that sponsorship. I've got some things on the side I'm working on. All right. So if we could just stop bashing Pizza Hut.
Only if we can take up residence in like a former Pizza Hut building, you know, you're just like one of those buildings that that iconic, just like angled roof.
The Hut.
Yeah. So Pizza Huts, Mikey, I know you're a little bit younger than us. I'm like, yeah, Pizza Huts used to be in a literal hut. And now because they've abandoned that, you'll see just like the eye clinics and just like doctor's offices and like what else, like insurance offices, all inside Pizza Huts.
This reminds me, this will be I was on, I'm looking for furniture for a place I'm moving into. And I was on Craigslist and there was somebody selling a Pizza Hut, literally a Pizza Hut booth from like a restaurant. And it was like not very expensive. And I was like, maybe.
Only if it comes with the lamp that hangs down.
It didn't.
Stained glass.
That would have been it. Can I call you Mikey? Is that okay?
Yeah, call me whatever.
I didn't know
want,
if that
man.
Was just for yeah. Janice referred to it earlier, but you also wrote a fantastic piece for Picture List about Tony La Russa. I've joked about this throughout the entirety of this podcast, every episode, where we don't ever want to talk about Tony La Russa, but he's making it and he's made it impossible for that to be the case. I guess it's a tough, and at the end of your piece, you sort of said, you brought up the reality of the situation, which is even though he absolutely should be fired for, you know, pick your reason, the White Sox are in first place. I actually think that even if they weren't, it wouldn't really matter. I think that for Jerry Reinsdorf to fire his buddy would probably be like, it just wouldn't happen under any circumstances. But for Sox fans right now, it's really conflicting because, you know, we want to put our full force into rooting for the team and all that. We love all the players, but you know, it's just tough. So can you talk a little bit about kind of, I guess, that as you were sort of writing that piece, because you brought up some things that I had even forgotten about early on in the process, and sort of just what got you to the piece of ultimately saying that this guy's, he's got to go.
To begin the season, or before the season, I just remember seeing it and I was like, I mean, I think the first thing I thought of was, oh, poor Janice.
Thank you for thinking of me. Thank you.
The White Sox are, preseason, I was also on another podcast where I was tasked with arguing that the White Sox were better than the Twins. As it turns out, they're all a whole lot better than the Twins. But I just thought it was a nightmare. Like, he is kind of a dinosaur. Like I said, he's not really known for actually being like basically having the Dusty Baker role of like being the kind of glue to the clubhouse. in fact, he has kind of a bad reputation, you know, as it pertains to that. I know that he butted heads with Ricky Henderson. I think Ricky Henderson, I don't know if he called him racist, but he essentially insinuated like, you know, black players don't like him. Players of color don't really like him. He doesn't like them. And as a team with a lot of players of color, it seemed like a bad fit to start with.
That we were also concerned with too. And also too, we saw the tweet with Marcus Thurman basically blatantly saying that there is no amount of money that could be thrown at him for him to play for Tony La Russa.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. We were concerned just mainly because, like, first of all, the rumors going around, we all thought it was a joke. We were all like, oh no, there's like no way this is going to happen. Like of course not. Like, Rick Hahn is going to be more sensible about this and hire actual candidates, qualified candidates. We were really hoping that he would at least pick someone who wasn't white. So, that was rather disappointing to see in that regard. To see that Stroman tweet, we were concerned that this would deter players of color from signing in, especially those in free agency. And Stroman was one of them. So,
yeah, I got a lot of grief for using what people call buzzwords, white privilege, racism. I might have used another, like, people were trying to argue that it was cronyism, and I was like, yeah, it is, but yes, cronyism and racism, like, they can all, you know, coexist.
Nepotism, for sure.
Yeah. I also thought that someone's gonna be like, hey, he's half Spanish, but they didn't. I was disappointed.
Until they figure out that Spain is in Europe.
Yeah, Tony La Russa is a person of color. That's undeniable.
he's an Italian ex person.
Yeah.
That's the name of the podcast.
Thank you. Can you please? But yeah, it's just, it's pretty unprecedented. Like, mm-hmm. I've never seen a member of, someone in power interact with their players like this, or like the players, just like going back and forth through the media. I've obviously seen times where guys, like, in like post-game interviews, like, maybe managers will say things and it's like, yo, it sounds like you're kind of blaming this guy for the lot, like, you could just not and whatever, but he did, and it was not only one, like, it's one of the more wild things that I've ever seen. So, yeah, they're like one of the winningest teams in baseball. They're doing fine right now, but I don't think that's because of him, and I don't think it's gonna mess with their momentum. So I don't think there's any reason not to, but obviously I think it's pretty clear from just about everyone that it's not going to happen. At least yet. So maybe something bigger needs to come out, but, like, obviously the players don't support him.
I was going to say, Tim Anderson, I think it was yesterday or the day before, commented and did, like, what, you know, an actual, like, leader, you know, should or would do. And in talking about kind of defusing the situation, which should not be Tim Anderson's responsibility. And yet, you know, here he is having to, defend or defuse a situation that his manager completely started.
My manager.
Yes. And, but Tim Anderson basically said that, you know, he said, you know, Tony's like our dad and we're like the bad kids that don't listen. And sometimes, you know, that's okay. And again, kind of diffused it with humor and bringing it all together, which it's just like, you know, that's really nice to see that Tim's doing that. But at the same time, you know, period. But then also, you know, the fact that, you know, Tony La Russa had an opportunity to defend his player in Yermín Mercedes. Not only did he not do that, but he threw him in front of, you know, in front of the bus and then put gasoline on him and then lit him. It was this whole thing. And
he was driving the bus, essentially.
He was driving the bus and he did all of that. But it's just that. That's what was really frustrating in seeing Tim Anderson say that, which is, again, Tim should be the manager. He basically is the manager in a lot of ways. But it's unfortunate that, you know, it's not the actual leader of the team in Tony La Russa, which he's very much not, who kind of, you know, the players have since the beginning not thrown him under the bus. And then here he is having absolutely no respect for his place. And that comment that he made about Lance Lynn, about, and you noted it in the column as well, just about, oh, it's the, what is it? I have an office. He has a locker. I mean, what the fuck is that? I mean, it's just, that's honest. Somehow, you know, it can't, unfortunately, if that were in the top five of the worst, you know, La Russa things since his current White Sox tenure, that might mean that there's not as many bad things, but it was a bad one.
Right. This is so incredibly self-inflicted too. So Mikey, mm-hmm. you noted in the piece that La Russa very well could have pulled Lance Lynn aside and said, you know, hey, look, this is how it is. But he chose to go to the media. Like he chose to put all this out there. And to go back to Tim Anderson for a moment. So yeah, that quote where he said that, you know, that the White Sox are like the bad kids who don't listen. And I know like he's joking, like he's trying to keep the situation lighthearted, but there's a lot of truth into that too. And that exactly is what a manager should do. Definitely diffuse any conflict, just show signs of leadership by affirming that the team still has some cohesion, just mainly because when I hear Tony La Russa speak, I'm like, just completely just throw Lance Lynn under the bus with your mean Mercedes. There's a party under the bus, apparently. But that's exactly what a leader should do. And to also go back to, so Tyler Duffy threw at your mean Mercedes. Tim Anderson called it a sign of weakness. Tony La Russa said he had no problem with it. So there's kind of like a big contrast there on what exactly a leader should do. And in my opinion, a leader should stick up for his for his players. So Mikey, one thing that you pointed out in your piece was that so Tony La Russa said that Tyler Duffy throwing at your mean Mercedes wasn't suspicious, but you looked at all 6,308 of Tyler Duffy's pitches since 2015. So apparently the pitch to Mercedes was the furthest pitch he's thrown to his arm side aside from an intentional walk. So the data is there, the evidence is there that it probably was intentional.
And I don't even know if, like, I don't know that we needed that, but I just figured, you know, this is super easy to do. I'm just going to pull up the horizontal pitch
location. It was great.
You know.
Fantastic. Like that definitely drove it home
it's
for
like,
me. That,
it's like, you know, for anyone that doesn't, it's like, fine, you want the breakdown? I'll give you the breakdown.
Yeah. I mean, over 6,000 pitches. What I was going to bring up is that, like, the quote where – what did he say? That he's going to have to endure something like within the clubhouse. How did y'all
the family? What was the
How did y'all interpret that?
I mean,
I don't know. It kind of like brought like mafia vibes to me.
Yeah,
100%. His last name's La Russa, so
no, just kind of showing his Italian ex culture.
I tweeted it from the podcast account, but I was like, what the hell does that mean? Like that, it's at best just a weird thing, and at worst, like a fucking horrifying thing to think about. But I don't know. And the way he said it too made it sound like, oh yeah, the players know what I'm talking about. But I don't think that, and then him calling it the family, it's like, Tony, there is a family in this with this clubhouse, but you're not a part of it. There's not, and that's the other thing about what Tim said about like he's like our dad. It's like, wow, that's a lot of that's really putting in, you know, again, just diffusing. And he shouldn't have to be in that position.
He's like a badass stepdad.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's just one of those things where I and we've talked about it all year long, but it is really just separating the team from the manager, which it would be great if it was just like, you know, they, one of the, seemingly the only other interview that they gave in the off season, cause I'm not even sure if they interviewed Tony La Russa for the job, was to former White Sox, Willie Harris. And it's like, I wish they would have hired Willie Harris. He had managerial experience throughout the, you know, different levels of the minor leagues. And that way, you know, I wouldn't have to have these weird conflicts every other day as far as wanting to root for the team, but also not wanting La Russa to get any credit for that. And I think that in your piece, when you talked about white privilege, I think that that's something that it is vitally important for, hopefully, for people to understand throughout this process. I mean, it's a kind of, it's like an obvious example that unfortunately people just are ignoring, or choosing to ignore. But again, we talked about it before in that interviewing Willie Harris before the season, only to then, when they kind of knew that they were always going to give LaRusso the job, is just defensive. And it shows that in, what are we, 2021, in baseball, and people talking about all the, you know, progress, it's sort of like, I don't know that any of that, you know, I guess it's, you could point to certain things, but at least in the White Sox organization, you know, a team that Janice and I love, that progress, they just cannot say that that progress has been made at all. So hopefully this is a 1 year thing. I'd love to say they could win the World Series and then LaRusso can walk away and then we can get back to something, but because he's not going to be fired. And I think that's what's so shameful about all of this, like seemingly whatever he does, because you ran down the list, Mikey, in your piece, but there's too many things to count.
And when I was in sixth grade, I had a teacher who, after we had a pretty, like, we had a team. So you have two different like cohorts within a team that are just like swapping teachers. We had such a bad team that after the year he retired, I hope that's what happens, Tony La Russa, this year, is that Tim Anderson and the others are just such bad kids like me in sixth grade that he just rides off into the sunset. World Series or not, that's what I'm hoping to see.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, like, yeah, I honestly hope that, you know, the kids misbehave as much as they do, because first of all, it's like fun as hell to see. It's fun as hell to see my team having fun. So as a byproduct, I also have fun. But the whole thing with respect goes both ways. So, I mean, like you said in your piece, La Russa talks about having respect for the game and for his opponents, but he doesn't seem to respect his own players. So, and I mean, like what the heck are they supposed to do other than just ignore his old ass and continue playing the way they are, which is just fantastic, and being true to themselves. So I think my favorite Your Mean Mercedes quote, and I think he posted this on Instagram right after the whole incident. It was something along the lines of, like, be you, that's it. And it definitely kind of had some, like, live, laugh, love vibes to it. But I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Yeah. And the fact that we're talking about him so much just makes me even more angry. We should be talking about how incredible of a season Your Mean Mercedes is having, yeah. Even though, I mean, he's been knocked around by various teams over the past 10 years. That too also makes me so angry, just mainly because Your Mean Mercedes needs to pad his stats. So when arbitration rolls around,
yeah,
he can go ahead and get that, you know, big fat payday. But the thing is, though, he's 28, so more than likely, he's probably just going to get, like, just one big payday, and that's going to be pretty much it for him. But, yeah, just kind of thinking about the disparity between these sides, that, you know, you have this Hall of Fame manager trying to just protect and uphold the unwritten rules of the game or whatever. And then you've got this 28-year-old rookie from the Dominican Republic who was acquired in the minor league Rule 5 draft, like still trying to make a name for himself and still trying to just push his team and just carry his whole team, as CC Sabathia said, on his back. I swore a lot less than CC there, though, but still, though, it's fucking infuriating. There you go. I said it.
I think you hit the nail on the head, though. Like, the focus shouldn't be on the players at all. Maybe you can say, like, I don't even know what sportsmanlike means. You know, it's such like a made up.
It's so arbitrary. It's so incredibly just abstract of what sportsmanship looks like.
Ugh. Well, and the goalposts shift based on, you know, the skin tone of the player too. So yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be the focus at all. And like, not only that, but you're right. Like, I don't know if he will get a payday. Like, it might just be his arbitrations that like he's not going to get like, I don't know, a 5-year, like $15 million, whatever. Like he's probably not going to get that. Especially just like with his, he's not the greatest fielder. Maybe y'all have some more insight, but yeah. like truly every at bat counts for him. Like another homer could be, I think I saw someone do a study that, or cite a study that said that every home run is basically equivalent to like $50,000 in arbitration. Like wow. That's a big deal. So, yeah, for a 28-year-old rookie, I don't know how you can, say otherwise. And like, regardless of what the third base coach, what the sign was, like if it was don't swing, like, I don't really care.
And I mean, again, it goes back to this idea of privilege with La Russa saying, you know, for him to say, that's not how we play the game. You know, he doesn't play his game. He plays the game of baseball, whatever. And that's that number about the 50,000 per home run. I mean, for Tony La Russa, for Hall of Fame manager guy, you know, maybe that's, yeah, drop in the bucket. You know, he get a couple DUIs, no big deal. Still go on to get a coveted, you know, job in one of those coveted jobs in sports in the world, whatever. But for Yermín Mercedes, that's significant. And the fact that La Russa can't understand that and also chooses to, as he said in the, you know, like playing this stuff off as, oh, you guys are talking about this a lot more than it actually exists, or I don't pay attention to any of that stuff. And it's like, well, you should pay attention, because if you paid attention, you would see people that are talking about this and making very good points, which should be common sense. And I think it's also unfortunate that at the beginning of the season, or even before the season, Lucas Giolito made a comment on a show or something talking about how, you know, La Russa is kind of, he's letting us, La Russa spoke to the team and said, you know, I'm not trying to get in the way of this chemistry. I'm not trying to get in the way of the clubhouse. I need to earn your respect, not the other way around. And I believe that La Russa said that. And it was nice of Giolito to report that out, but it's a lie. That's just not the case, because he's not acting like that. So for any of the people, and I was one of them that thought in the back of my head, hey, maybe there's a chance that Tony will learn or something. That was taken away almost immediately, really before the season even started. And again, we're not even far into the season. What are we, a little over a quarter of the way into the season? And we've already seen so many things, so many issues. And I mean, for the love of God, like he had, like La Russa runs like a pet rescue organization. And like, how do you fuck that up? How do you run a pet rescue organization that is like with a toxic culture? The answer is that you have Tony La Russa at the helm. I mean, it seems like an easy one.
Is that a thing?
That's a
thing. Yeah.
We'll like send you the link. It's toxic. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. He was running a pet rescue organization out of the Bay Area, I believe. And his family, including his wife and his daughters, I believe, were like on the board. And there were some people on the board that were making outwardly just racist comments, trying to give you a brief synopsis of it. But essentially, the entire organization just I know he resigned, and then his family resigned shortly after. But yeah, it was just not looking great.
Yeah.
I feel like he's someone who uses the term anarcho Bidenist, like seriously, like, I don't know. He seems so sketchy on the political side of the coin too.
Yeah. That'd be a whole other thing that I'm sure I don't know if I want to know or if I don't want to know.
I've already seen some things, and I think I might have sent them to you, Sam. I might have sent them to you too, Mikey. It's certainly questionable. But
Mikey, I wanted to bring up to you before we wrap up, and thank you again so much for joining us. I hope you can come back on often. You wrote a piece. So I've been kind of like mostly off Twitter, I'd say, until very, very recently, tweeting from the podcast account. We'll see how long that lasts. Anyway, so I've missed a lot of great pieces and things like that. But something that I caught up with was a piece that you wrote, I think, in January, kind of talking about your mental health and some stuff like that. I wanted to, first of all, just thank you for that piece. It was absolutely incredible. Again, I know I'm the last of the party with this, but, I'm just wrapping up my first year of a clinical mental health counseling program. And
what?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So it's,
oh, you guys have some stuff in common. Pretty cool.
Absolutely. And you just, I mean, that piece was just, incredibly, relatable, very touching. And I think a lot about, especially since I've been in this program, and just like access and awareness and all of these things being, you know, I said the other day to somebody that like, we can learn all the you could be the greatest, you know, therapist of all time, but if someone doesn't have the access to see you, then it's kind of irrelevant. It's sort of like, you know, or somebody doesn't know the how or where, or, you know, whatever, to, you know, how they can get help. So thank you for that piece. And I just think that the more and more people are, really, really talking about stuff. And I think that we're still really, really much closer to the beginning than we are anywhere further along the line. But I think that this stuff is really vitally important. So just wanted to tell you, that was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I definitely think it's like, I just feel like if I'm a really open person, so like if I'm not going to be very open about things and like help crush stigma and create awareness and just like, I don't know, help create that dialogue, then like, who's going to? And there's probably some unconscious part of me that's like wanting pats on the back or whatever. But yeah, I just kind of felt like I was pretty moved by a piece by Brandon Warren that he wrote about his mental health and an experience he had when he was a kid. And I felt like it was something that would resonate with people, and it ended up resonating with dozens of people. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll keep that up. I mean, it's yeah, it was awesome. So yeah, just gotta keep talking, you know.
Yeah, I always try to talk about my mental health whenever I can, and I know like Mikey, you and I have had like several conversations about what we've been doing to improve ourselves and make ourselves better. And I think too, just to get that dialogue started. And I think also too, just culturally. So Mikey, you and I are both Filipino. So we've talked often about a lot on how a lot of elders tend to either dismiss mental health, don't really think it's a thing. I do know from my own experiences, I'm definitely trying to push my mom into accepting how like talking about your mental health is like absolutely normal. She just experienced a loss not too long ago. Her friend passed away and she kept on bottling all these emotions up and telling me like that she needed me around, but she wasn't telling me why she really needed me around. And I'm like, Mom, you're sad. You're just sad. Just like, please admit that you're grieving over your friend. And
yeah.
You will feel so, so, so much better. So yeah, I think like culturally too, there needs to be more of an in-depth conversation, especially with our elders on how mental health is important to them too, and how all of the younglings are talking about it. Yeah, just make it normal. Normalize it.
Yeah, the Zoomers are super open about it. Just like, yeah, I'm taking SSRIs. I go to therapy every week. Like sometimes I want to kill myself. Like it's crazy how they don't even flinch. It's just like, yeah, this is it. And one of my friends is a high school teacher and he's like, yeah, they are. It's wild. It's different from even when we were in high school, which is, you know, a little over a decade ago.
I do have to admit that there are some times where I'm just kind of reluctant to share certain things. And I don't know if it's because of my upbringing. I was raised by older parents. So a lot of the times when I talk about, using cannabis to improve my mental health, I'll just be like, but no, it's like people like you who have certainly encouraged me to be more open about it. And yeah, just Just be more open about things like, I've been seeing a therapist every week for the past year, and just my outlook on things has improved so much. And so as a result, too, I can kind of see through a lot of my mom's behaviors, too. So maybe a year ago, I would have just dismissed my mom as, you know, just being neurotic and just being like, oh, she's needy. She just wants me around for whatever. But I'm like, no, she's sad. She's like, absolutely, she wants me around because she's sad. So a lot of it too, a lot of things I'm trying to correct within myself have become so much better via therapy. So yes.
If my oversharing online can help out, then I'm happy to do so. I am kind of working on behind the scenes. I bought an iPad that I've begun trying to draw on and work on some things. I'm gonna try and like create some like t-shirts, sweatshirts, whatever. Donate some money to some foundation. I don't know what. It's always, I don't know, they're always kind of sketchy, but that's in the works. Hopefully I can make it work. If I'm too bad at the design aspect, I'll hit up some of my buddies at Pictureless, but it's on stay tuned.
We'll be first in line, customers there. I'll tell you that.
I appreciate y'all.
Wait, you're gonna like load up your Shopify site immediately.
Yes.
Buy a couple of things, some coffee mugs, t-shirts, whatever.
We'll have the works.
All right. So that is pretty much all the time we have for today. Again, thank you so much. Thanks to Michael Ahedo for joining us. So Mikey, if our listeners want to follow you, follow your work, where can they find you?
You can find my writing at Lookout Landing, at Pictureless. You can find my sounds at It's Never Sunny in Seattle, where I podcast about the Mariners with Andy Patton, and Clubhouse Naptime, where I podcast about really just MLB with Anders Jorstad. Okay. I always have to
ask. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. I always have to think about how to say Anders' name. I used to think it was Anders, but so that's where you can find me. I've been putting a lot of set lately, and will continue to do so now that I'm working less.
I hope you continue to put stuff out, just mainly because like I just really enjoy your writing. It's just always fascinating stuff. And I learn so much too, whether it's about my own team or like just MLB in general. So other than that, that is our show for today. As always, Sam Sherman. I am Janice Scurio. Follow Northside Sox Pod at that handle exactly. It is Northside Sox Pod. You can follow me if you want to. I don't care if you do. I don't care if you don't. Whatever. My handle is Scuriosa, Scuriiosa. Other than that, take care, y'all. Take care of yourselves and go White Sox.